Steve Bertrand. All right, we're all very proud of the Chicago lakefront, right? The free and open spaces along the lake. It's something that people who like to ride and run up and down the lakefront, certainly politicians as well, point to a lot. Well, it did not come easily. In fact, it was quite a struggle. That's the subject of a new book called Lakefront, Public Trust and Private Rights in Chicago, written by a couple of professors, Joseph Kearney and Thomas Merrill. They're both on the phone with me now. Gentlemen, welcome.
Good to be with you.
All right, Joseph, tell me this. It goes back to the ruling in 1892 where this idea of a public trust doctrine started. That was a case involving Chicago. Can you explain that for me?
Sure. The story involved an attempt by the Illinois legislature in 1869 to grant rights over what was the submerged land off of what we know as Grant Park, but it wasn't remotely that much land at the time, to the Illinois Central, and a struggle between the railroad and the city and others as to who would control possible development in that area. The commonly accepted story had been that the public trust doctrine, which the court invented in 1892 to support the legislature's 1873 repeal of the grant, was the reason that the lakefront unfolded as it did. That's partly true, but there's a lot more to it than that.
Joseph, what else is there to it?
There are any number of legal doctrines, including one that's entirely different, the public dedication doctrine, and that's what explains the successful efforts of Montgomery Ward and others to prevent development there.
Was Ward, or were there others as well, Joseph, that had to do that with the individual stories? You know, we're the city of big shoulders. We love our sort of myths of some people from that day. Who were the leaders at the time?
So Ward certainly was the leader in keeping buildings out of the lakefront. The book is replete with truly interesting individuals, from Alonzo Mack, who was the master lobbyist for the Illinois Central in Springfield in 1869, who got the grant through, to Ellis Chesbrough, who was a sanitation engineer who conceived of the original idea of reversing the river, Stephen Field, who was the Supreme Court Justice, who wrote the very closely divided decision for the court, 4-3, and, of course, Daniel Burnham, who had a great deal to do with the development of the South Lakefront.
Sure. Thomas, tell me about how the reversal of the river impacted how we enjoy the lakefront today in the parks.
Yeah, it's something that's not appreciated very much. The reversal of the river, of course, purified the waters of the river quite a bit. The river was basically the dumping ground of the sewers of Chicago, untreated sewage going into the river. By reversing the river, you sort of saved the river from contamination. But, of course, before the river was reversed, it flowed into the lake, and so all the contamination ended up in the lake, which, of course, imperiled the water supply. But it also, once the river was reversed, cleaned up the lakefront. So I think it's no accident that once the river was reversed, you saw a lot of public support for building out Grant Park and starting to create these other wonderful parks north and south of the center of the city, because it was much more enjoyable to, be on the lakefront than it used to be.
How close were we to, and I'll ask this of Thomas, how close were we to not having this beautiful lakefront? I mean, we tend to think of it as inevitable. Did we almost lose it?
We very much almost lost it. There was a huge consensus for a very long period of time, I'd say starting in the 1860s all the way up to the first few decades of the 20th century, that Chicago desperately needed an outer harbor. The harbor was the Chicago River. It was incredibly congested, and everybody thought, well, if Chicago's going to continue to grow, it's going to continue to be this major inland port, we're going to have to build an outer harbor. But there was all this conflict over who was going to build the harbor, where it was going to be located. The Illinois Central thought it had a claim to build the harbor, but other people opposed it. And the politicians could never decide whether to put it in the middle of the city or up in Streeterville or down on the south side. And because of this unending conflict and the lack of money for the public authorities to build the harbor, it was never built. So Chicago is different from like New York and other cities that have these rotting docks and so forth along the waterfront. Chicago really doesn't have any of that, but it was somewhat of a fluke that the reason we don't have that in Chicago was because nobody could agree on where to build this outer harbor.
So things haven't changed so much. Our politicians' inability to make a decision actually led to this.
Yes, inability to make a decision, also wondering how to pay for it. That doesn't change much either, does it?
Joseph, So we're told here that Chicago is kind of unique in this. Now, I'm familiar with Milwaukee. Milwaukee's got a pretty nice and open lakefront, too. But does Chicago stand out in the Great Lake cities when it comes to lakefront property?
It does. Milwaukee does have a beautiful lakefront. At the same time, the amount of access to the water for the public all along is not to the same extent. And certainly the fortuities and the contingencies that led to the development of the Chicago lakefront, as well as the truly important legal doctrines that emerged from it, in addition to the geography, distinguish it from really every other place in the country.
So if we're so proud of our lakefront and we've got this area that was newly cleaned up after the reversal of the river, why wasn't the 1893 World's Exposition held in Grant Park rather than down in Jackson Park near Hyde Park, I guess?
Everybody basically wanted to put the World's Fair in the downtown area in what was called Lake Park then, later Grant Park. But again, all these conflicts broke out, and people couldn't agree how to do it. The Illinois Central said, well, we'll give you some land, but you have to give us the right to build the outer harbor in return. And then the property owners of Michigan Avenue said, you know, no way are we going to let you build an outer harbor there. And so endless squabbling, and finally at the last minute, Daniel Burnham and the other directors of the fair said, well, I guess we can build it in Jackson Park after all. And so that's why it ended up in Jackson Park. It was a huge hassle to get there. I mean, the transportation difficulties were quite monumental to transport everybody from the center of the city down to Jackson Park. There was no easy way to get there. But the original aspiration was to put it right in the middle where Grant Park is now, but it just didn't work out.
So, Joseph, can you tell me why is it that, I mean, the drive goes all the way down the south side of the lake, but it stops at Hollywood. Why does it stop at Hollywood?
That was not the plan. The plan was to build Lincoln Park and the drive all the way to Devon. In order, though, to finance the drive, the Lincoln Park District, as it was then known, engaged in a series of creative deals with the shore owners in which the shore owners would give up any rights that they had to certain access to the water. In exchange, they got additional land to the west of the park and the drive, which they could fill in. Once it became clear that the Lincoln Park District intended to build a much bigger drive and a much bigger park than originally had been the idea, and it was going to be the case that the landowners would be a considerable distance from the shore, many of them balked at the situation and went to court and got deals that had been done decades before overturned. And so it was becoming prohibitively expensive for the park district to cut deals with the shore owners once they were no longer satisfied with the terms. Once the condominiums then began to go in along Sheridan Road north of Hollywood, that was pretty well the end of it, because the people who owned the condominiums really couldn't be attracted at all to give up the areas to the east and the views of the lake.
The name of the book is Lakefront, Public Trust and Private Rights in Chicago. It's written by Joseph Kearney and Thomas Merrill. It is Cornell University Press. And I think you guys both would agree, probably it's a pretty good beach read for the summer, right?
Absolutely.
Nice to talk to you both. Thanks very much.
Thanks for the opportunity.
You're listening to Chicago's Afternoon News here on 720 W.